Okay, let's get the show on the road. Please stand for the pledge.
Mr. Chairman, after the pledge, I'd like a moment of silence for the victims in Manchester, please.
Okay.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
People are still standing?
Well, I am.
Okay.
All right.
Director Drew has asked for a moment of silence in remembrance of the victims of the attack in Manchester, England.
That's good. Thank you.
Thank you. Good idea. Okay, at this time, we'll take public comment on items not otherwise on the agenda.
Okay.
Good morning, Peter.
Good morning. My name is Peter Van Zandt. I'm a NID customer, taxpayer, all of that sort of credential. Thank you for this opportunity. This is a transparency day. We still are asking for video transparency. We think it's a good idea. You've heard all of the discussions. We can find no reason why you can't afford it, which gets me to the second transparency issue, is you're going to go into closed session to consider buying several more parcels in the canyon. And quite frankly, I don't know why you are doing that. You don't have an approved project. Why do we, as the ratepayers, own properties that you don't have a use for, or you haven't broadcast any use for? So it just seems like a waste of money. So it's a transparency issue. I think it's time that NID put out a plan of why you're buying those properties and what you're going to do with them, particularly if the dam does not get built. And thank you for your time.
Mr. President.
Turn your mic on.
Dustin Cooper, may I just offer a reminder, if there's an item on the agenda as that is, you could speak to it at that time. This public comment portion right now is for non-agendized items.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Marin Lipowitz. I'm from Cedar Ridge, Grass Valley, and I'm an NID customer. I brought the river with me today. The river can't speak for itself, so we, the public, need to speak for the river. And I would like to invite anyone to take a drop, a water drop that speaks to you, and speak it here in public comment. And then either gift the board with the drops, or take it, give it to a friend, post it somewhere where it can be seen around town. So on the back of every one of these is an explanation. This one says, number two endangered, the Bear River. The Bear River is the number two endangered river in the country, only because of the dam. AmericanRivers.org, a national organization centered in Washington, D.C., listed the 10 most endangered rivers in order of endangerment. The Colorado is the first, and the Bear is number two, because of the dam. As Tracy Sheehan of Foothills Water Network said, the public needs to get involved in water decisions when a water supplier pushes for a costly dam at the great expense of the community and its ecosystems. So I would like anyone who feels so moved as a member of the public to speak for the river. And I'll close with the alternate pledge. Anyone who wants to join me can. I pledge allegiance to the earth and all the life which it supports. One planet in our care, irreplaceable, with sustenance and respect for all.
Hello, my name is Miko Sveberson. I'm a resident of Nevada City Co-Housing, and our HOA is a customer of NID. I'd like to address two things today regarding Centennial Reservoir and Dam. During the scoping period for development of the Environmental Impact Statement, or EIS, by the Army Corps of Engineers, I submitted a six-page technical comment letter to the Corps about what I believe should be addressed by the EIS for the document to have validity. My comments focused on four areas. I will highlight only the first two here today. In case the Army Corps has not forwarded my comments to you, I will leave a copy with the board secretary that I have here with me today. First, the need for adequate data and analysis of that data. NID claims that the proposed dam is the best method for providing drought protection to mitigate the regional effects of climate change that will be necessary to mitigate future water supply needs and improve water supply reliability. However, at present, this claim is based on conjecture and lacks adequate data upon which to support this assertion. In a presentation over 5 years ago to attendees of a State Water Resources Control Board workshop on agricultural water stewardship, Dr. Peter H. Gleick of the Pacific Institute for Studies in Development, Environment, and Security commented that the paucity of data is a problem throughout the state of California. We have few complete or accurate public water balances by district or basin or hydrologic region. Dr. Gleick recommended that the state collect better data for understanding basin scale water balances, particularly empirical measurements of water use, return flows, and groundwater percolation. 3 days ago, there was a front page story in the Sacramento Bee, the farm water suppliers breaking a state law. The article reported the results of an investigation by the Bee into state irrigation districts' compliance with the 2007 law passed as AB 1401, whose goal was to track farm water use, particularly collecting farm gate data to allow the state to monitor surface water delivered to farmers' irrigation districts. And when I think of NID, I think of irrigation ditches. The results indicated that less than 20% of the water districts were in compliance with the law, less than 20%, and noted sadly that the state does not keep a tally. Consequently, this begs the question from the NID board and public alike, has NID complied with AB 1401 reporting requirements? And if it has, then I request that NID publish or make access to those reports available to the public. Only with a true understanding of where the water goes, and particularly with ag water, which is 80% of NID's supply, or roughly that, and since water conservation is among the alternatives that NID is considering, then having these numbers is imperative. If, on the other hand, these data are lacking, then NID shouldn't be shooting from the hip and making a projection of future water needs and basing a billion-dollar decision on it. It should wait before proceeding until it has collected the necessary data. Second, the need for a comprehensive review of alternatives. At the May 2nd Educational Forum, hosted by the Nevada County Democrats, which I attended, General Manager Swertzinger, and Director Wilcox, when talking about evaluation of alternatives, made statements like, now I'm paraphrasing, show me the numbers and we'll consider it, meaning that they expect the public to take responsibility for generating alternatives that will save 110,000 acre feet of water and to determine the cost of those alternatives. I spoke with Nick Wilcox after the meeting and tried to make the case that it is not the responsibility of the public to generate alternatives and perform cost estimates. That sort of engineering analysis is what NID's paid consultants should be doing. Rather than expect the public to donate personal time or hold a series of bake sales to pay for these kinds of analyses, such an expense should be part of what is allocated in NISD's budget for this purpose. It makes no sense to expect the public to prepare investigations pro bono. NID should be thankful for the public service that the Foothill Water Network, Circle, and others have already performed, rather than expecting them to do more of NID's work for them. As Otis Wallman stated in his presentation on May 2nd, the correct approach is to consider building a dam last, after all the various alternatives have been vetted. This requires brainstorming and creative thinking both inside and outside the box. It takes sitting down in a collaborative, rather than a combative, setting with those who have proposed alternatives who are interested in researching and developing alternatives, and then sifting through those that appear to be the most practical and effective and the least costly and harmful over the long run. Once the process has progressed to that stage, then the detailed cost estimates can be made, and only after that should the most expensive and harmful alternative, which appears to be the dam, be considered. So thank you for hearing my comments.
Good morning. I'm Roger Hicks. I'm a local physician and owner and operator of UbiDocs Urgent Care. It's good to see you. I've known many of you for years, Nancy, through various things in the community, Nick through the Circle and Laura Wilcox Scholarship, and Scott when we worked together at Sutter Auburn Faith Emergency Department. Mr. Drew, Mr. Morbeck, nice to see you as well. So I'm going to speak to you this morning as a physician about a thing that, Scott, I know you're familiar with, and that's informed consent. Informed consent is a process in medicine for getting permission before doing a treatment or a procedure. It's transparency in medicine. It's a discussion that a clinician that I have with a patient before starting a treatment or performing surgery, and it includes certain things. It includes explaining the procedure or the recommended treatment plan and relevant information about that, particularly the need for it and the purpose of it, and also the risks, the benefits, and the alternatives. For it to be valid, the patient has to understand what was said, and the consent has to be voluntary. So if after going through all of this, explaining the treatment and the procedure, discussing the need for it and the purpose, the risks, the benefits, and the alternatives, if the patient says yes, then informed consent has been granted. Of course, there's another alternative. The patient can say no, and that's informed refusal. But in either case, the person's fully informed. So when I see a patient in my clinic, you know, they come in and they tell me what their symptoms are, and I do my exam, and I usually have an idea of what the problem is and what the treatment should be, or maybe what other tests should be ordered. But I don't just like plunge ahead with that, with what I think is right or what I know is right. I get informed consent. Informed consent is considered the right thing to do in medicine, both ethically and legally, and it's become the standard of practice. Not getting informed consent before performing some medical intervention is now grounds for malpractice. It didn't always used to be like this. Back in the old days, the doctor would say, especially if the patient was a woman, "I know just what to do, dear. Don't you worry your pretty little head about it. You just leave all the details to me and everything will be just fine." And we don't do that anymore. We get informed consent, but I feel like the NID board is living in the old days. With its refusal to live stream meetings, this board is the opposite of informed consent. It feels like you don't want us to know what you're doing, and we're the people who elected you. It feels paternalistic, like one of those old-time doctors. No informed consent, no transparency. Informed consent's the standard of care now. And I think NID, if it's good for medicine, it's good for NID. I mean, if it's good for patients. You've prescribed this dam for us, but there's no informed consent. We don't know if it's needed, number one.
You haven't told us about the possible side effects like waste of taxpayers' money or destruction of Native American sites, loss of recreational sites, condemnation of private land, loss of habitat, free-flowing river, and we don't know what the people that finance or the institutions that finance the dam will want in return. So I think informed consent is good for patients, it's good for NID's constituents, and I urge you to live stream the meetings. Thank you.
Good morning again. This is Shirley Osgood speaking, and I am an NID customer. First of all, I want to say thank you to you, Bennett, and Pascal for being here and doing the live streaming today. And I did pick up one of the water drops because I think this is important. The future is green. NID should strive to be on the cutting edge of water management by restoring meadows, wetlands, and floodplains, by repairing and modifying its aging canals and facilities, promoting and subsidizing water conservation, stopping leaks, and metering water. A dam should be the very last consideration, not the first. And again, as I said a few weeks ago, please think outside the damn box. Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you for letting us speak. I'm Pamela Osgood, and I'm also an NID customer, live in Grass Valley. What I've been thinking about is who's going to profit? You know, usually when some project is put forward, you have to look at where the money's going and who's going to make money out of this and who's going to really benefit out of it. Because it seems to me that all around the country and around the world, not just in the United States, dams are being torn down. You know, everywhere they're recognizing, well, we thought this was a good idea 30, 50, even 100 years ago, but we realize now it's not, you know. And on the Navajo Reservation, I would just like to say that the Colorado River supposedly waters access through there, and indeed it is for mining, for the mining companies, uranium and coal. But the Navajos that I know, the Diné people, have to drive more than 50 miles and have a truck and fill up their water tank because they don't get any water. They water their corn by hand when they plant the seeds. So, you know, we're not in that kind of a situation, but we need to look at who's profiting from it. And I would really like to know that. And I do hope that you will listen to the people who come before me who've really asked for more research to be done. Don't run over the citizens who pay your salaries. It's not right. Thank you.
Morning, NID Board. Mike Pasner, Indian Springs Organic Farm, Penn Valley, California. Been using NID water for 31 years to grow vegetables and trees and grapes, all the stuff I'm taking care of every day.
With some sort of special deal, right?
Being a farmer?
The price you pay for the water?
It's enough, Scott.
Every time I'm so thinking, you gotta get
it. Yes, sir, but I'm still a ratepayer.
Right.
And I'm a taxpayer.
Special rate.
And I vote. You got the special rate correct.
Okay. I don't know what the rate is, but
you can look it up. That's easy for you to look
up.
Yeah, no. John knows it by heart.
Figured you'd know it. You know, sweet deal.
At any rate, we're back to what I was talking about. Thank you, Pascal and you, Bennett, for doing this. This is transparency. I'm back to using the word transparency because that's what we're talking about here. What you're doing in these closed boardroom sessions is not transparent. Live streaming needs to happen. We're all going to still keep coming here until it does happen. Just doing the sound doesn't get it. We want to see who we're talking to. Mr. Cooper, I heard you about approaching NID about this issue at the right time. I don't have all day to stay here, so I'm approaching it now. buying land for this dam is inappropriate before the project has been approved, and especially since this project is never going to happen. What are you going to do with this land? You going to return it to those homeowners who've moved on? Not acceptable to be doing that kind of stuff when you're my irrigation district. It's just wrong. It's sneaky and it's wrong. The next board meeting is June 14th. The vegetation management plan is coming before you. This is very important. It remains almost unchanged from the past vegetation management report. You got two people who are into organic farming here on the board who are going to vote yes on this vegetation management plan, which has herbicide use all over it, unnecessary herbicide use all over it. There are alternatives that can be investigated and should be investigated. I know REM's trying to do some investigation, but this has been going on for like 30 years. We should be to the point where we're not using this level of herbicides and the type of herbicides and the way we're using them. So this issue is your next big challenge that will also require a huge amount of transparency. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Diana Suarez, and I picked up one of these water drops that Marin put up. It says bathtub ring. Enough surplus water needed to fill the reservoir has only happened twice since 2002. I have seen a number of presentations by Otis Woolen. He has a big old graph that shows the water that's flowed over Camp Far West, and it's only flowed twice in the last, since 2002, that's 15 years. So that's where the extra water is, 2 years out of 15, the rest of the time. So it'll often be part empty, exposing an ugly, steep, and barren strip that limits both accessibility and carbon capture. Drought may necessitate draining Yuba River to fill Centennial. When I was a kid, my dad bought a boat, and I've been to lots of reservoirs, and I've sunk knee-deep in the glorious mud alongside the lukewarm water and had a great time floating out with my inner tube. I didn't know it was a hot little bathtub, but I always enjoyed them, and people over in Colfax like Rawlins okay, but we don't want another Rawlins when we have a river. We have Rawlins. We have, and John put out this glorious video last week, and I don't know how many of the pictures were taken at Rawlins, but there's not shorebirds lounging in the gentle sloping shoreline. They're steep, eroding dirt banks, and that's what we have at Rawlins. People make do. They drive up to where the river comes in, and the sediment is building up, and they park there, and they have a pretty good time because it's a shallow enough bank to park their boat, but a lot of it is steep, dirt, eroding, muddy water. And I also heard John say that it'll help the salmon to build this reservoir. I also heard a fisheries biologist say that a river is a cold water fishery and a reservoir is a warm water fishery. The warm water fisheries foster species that we don't necessarily want that are invasive species. The cold water fishery fosters native fish, which we want to help. We have a wonderful fly fishing catch and release program along the Bear River now. We'd like to keep it. Thank you.
My name is Betsy Lombard, and I just want to say that I just kayaked the Bear River like 3-4 days ago. It was fabulous. There were people fishing, recreating, relaxing all along the entire stretch of the river from Colfax to Dog Bar. Everybody was enjoying it. There were geese, there were families of ducks, there was a deer that just stumbled upon our way as we came. It was a fantastic experience. Please don't take that from us.
Good morning. My name's Nicole Reglin. I live in Grass Valley. Who will pay for it? If you build it, they will come. If you build the Centennial Dam, they will come. Holding on to water rights is insurance that our population will increase. We will become a suburb. Box homes will be built. The already growing opiate addicted and meth population will grow. More crime. Fire danger will increase. Roads will become dilapidated from increased use. Who will pay for this? Us, NID users and non-NID users. and ID users through increased prices, everyone with higher taxes. We will need more law enforcement, more fire protections, more ordnance, more government. People who have lived here for generations will be priced out of being able to stay here. I did not appreciate your interruption when Mike was speaking. Our farmers and farm workers do our community a service by allowing us to buy food not trucked in from other counties and states. They deserve those rates. The landscape will change. The landscape of people will change. That is not the Nevada County the population wants. That is not the Bear River our trees and wildlife want. Water is life, dams are death.
Oh, man. So powerful.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm a retired teacher. I love science. I love water. I love life.
Name.
I'm sorry.
Should name. I call oh, please down? State your name for the record.
Ann Lyon. I'm so sorry. I'm an NID customer, and I'm here today as an unofficial representative for the Center for Biological Diversity, the Audubon Society, and the Sierra Club of the Bay Area. We're concerned about many issues right now surrounding the dam, primarily transparency, but the dam would negatively affect the watershed downstream from here. That's the Bay Area, and the wetland biodiversity and sustainability. There is great concern about those issues. My personal primary concern is the effect of the generated methane that will happen when you down all that timber. That's exactly what happens as it decomposes. Mother Nature takes care of that in the forest with all of the, you know, little animals and whatever, I forgot the word. But we are generally concerned and we are taking notice. And we want transparency about what's going on. So thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Holly Mitten and I live in Grass Valley. I have spoken only once before here at a meeting to express my wishes that the issue of live streaming be considered positively by this board. I'd like to think that the five of you have the best of intentions, not only for NID, but for the community in which you serve. To me, that means that you will communicate with the people who have elected you, the people who pay for the services provided by NID. To me, it seems that as I sit in these meetings and I hear the comments and the consistent expression of the community that we want more information, that we want live streaming, that at some point, perhaps, we will hit the 100th monkey. We will hit the tipping point at which you will reconsider your decision. I am here to express my wish that that happens sooner than later, and perhaps in the next month or so. Thank you.
My name is Joanna Gilbert, and I have been a resident here for 17 years, and I live next to the free-flowing Bear River. And so I hike down to the Bear River and pick blackberries, and I have camped there many times. I've hiked miles and miles and waded even more in the Bear River. I love it. And my friends and I, we sit on rocks in the middle of the Bear River and visit because it's such a unique and beautiful place. And on the other side of my place is your proposed pipeline, which there has been no information at all given. I really would like to get more information about that, whether it's going to be above ground, below ground, how it's going to affect the road, how traffic is going to be handled during construction if that occurs. And also, I'm really interested in the place where Dog Bar intersects with Magnolia Road. Like to know that. My neighbor across the way from me, Yeah, his well is a couple of feet off Dog Bar Road. And there's a cliff on the other side. So I have a lot of questions about that. I'd like to know. I've been going to meetings for years. And also, I have a question about if you're going to allow water, motorized watercraft, on the reservoir if it gets built. Because I could hear all the noise from the Hanson Brothers mine when it was in operation. So, and since this impacts me so much, I have the flooded Bear River, I have the pump house and the pipeline all the way down around. I would appreciate if you guys would live stream. I've been coming to the meetings, but I still can't see everything all the time. Thank you, Pascal. Thank you, Yvonette. Because, yeah, I'm really concerned about this. This is my home, and I love it. And once it's gone forever. So please live stream. Thank you.
Good morning. George Olive, Nevada City. Just to say this morning, especially to Nick and to Will, those of us who attended the last Administrative Practices Committee believe there was a commitment made to discuss the video streaming again at your next June 6 APC meeting. And I sent an email to each of you stating that we believe that was a commitment, and I hope that indeed at the next APC meeting in June, there's an opportunity for you two and members of the community to discuss live streaming and hopefully see it come back to the full board. Thank you.
I will be respectful of your time. My name is Sid Brown. I'm from Nevada City. I just had 2 points that I wanted to raise to the board. One was to underscore George Olive's previous comment, in anticipation and expectation that the video streaming will be on the next full board agenda following your APC meeting. I was wishing at and have previously stated that I don't understand why, since the committee, the board can meet as a committee of a whole, why we had to wait another month, but we're getting there, and I appreciate the progress that has been made thus far on your seeking of transparency. So that was issue number one. Issue number two, and I understand you cannot respond to me, but I want to raise to the board my concern about the AB 52 consultation with the non-UAIC groups.
UAIC.
Isn't that what I said? Non-UAIC, United Auburn Indian Community, I believe. At the last board meeting, or at least the board meeting April 26, which I re-listened to this morning, thanks to your audio availability, Nancy Weber requested that those section of the minutes regarding consultation be sent to Shelley Covert at Nevada City Rancheria, and I hope that that has been done, and I just want to bring it back to the board's attention and hope that there has been a response to Ms. Weber's request. Thank you.
Going once, going twice. Okay, we'll close public comment. Unless somebody feels slighted. No. I mean, any more than. Okay. Moving on to the consent agenda.
Move for the approval.
Okay.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Division 1. Division 2.
Aye.
Division 3.
Aye.
Division 4.
Aye.
Division 5.
Aye. Okay, special orders. Brian.
A new
shiny face.
Good morning. Yes, it is. It's my pleasure to introduce one of our newest employees. This is Josh Knuckles. Josh was born in Riverside, California. His family moved up here when he was about 5 years old. Lived Grass Valley, graduated from NU. After NU, he attended Humboldt State and obtained and graduated with a BS in forestry. He worked with the Forest Service for 6 or 7 years, forest management. He was a hot shot for a while there and putting out forest fires. Josh is married, he has a 4-year-old girl, and he found it harder and harder when he worked for the Forest Service to be away for months at a time. And so he wanted to find something here local and be more stable and have a better family life. And so he became interested in the water industry, and he's looking for a way to find a way into the industry itself. Josh found his way in. He worked as a temp for us down in the plaster yard for 6 months. He proved himself. He has a great work ethic and proved himself to us that he'd be a good employee, and we're really looking forward to a lot of years, Josh, working for the NID, and welcome to the district.
Okay, general orders. Item number 4, New Town Canal Realignment Project.
Good morning, board, public, and staff. The purpose of this item is to approve a resolution.
Please announce yourself, Mr. King.
Gary King, Engineering Manager, Nevada Irrigation District, is to approve a resolution for the abandonment of the Newtown Canal realignment. The CEQA is complete. Construction is complete, other than some minor asphalt we had to hold off from during the winter. The intent of this item is to clarify what was already spoken to in the CEQA document and have a resolution to adopt, as per our rules and regulations, to abandon the canal. As listed in my staff report, there's approximately 7 people that are affected by the abandonment. We've already heard from 2 of them. One has indicated they want it to be filled, the other one wants us to leave it alone. So at this point, that was discussed in our engineering committee on May 16, 2017, and it is recommended staff to approve this resolution to do this abandonment.
Any board comment on this matter?
Gary, I shared with Rem this morning, I have some video that was taken of the Greenhorn Farm quite a few years ago, actually. I'm sorry, this is unrelated. But
would you like to bring this up in board?
Yeah,
board
let's do that instead.
Okay.
Let's do that instead.
I do have a comment.
Okay, Nancy, please.
This area is served by me, long history. I'm trying to decide what to do with this piece of canal, and we've actually replaced it with pipe in the road. There is a drainage problem there that existed before NID came. And so NID with REM has worked to work on a reasonable approach. Gary, you look like I'm going to shoot you.
Smile, man, smile. We are done with the Lower Cascade experience.
All kinds of experiences here. So it's important that we work with these folks to see if we can help resolve the drainage problem, because to some degree, the canal, probably an empty canal, drained away some of the water. REM is working actively with these people. My files fill half a file drawer on this project. So a good resolution is yet to come, and I'm happy that we're working on a positive outcome.
To answer that question, and as indicated in the CEQA document and discussed with the engineering committee in the past, the district will be hiring a consultant for each parcel and then look at the overall of each parcel for drainage. That consultant will develop a set of plans. Those plans will be reviewed and agreed to between the owner and the district. Then the district will hire a contractor, to fix the drainage as per the agreed upon grades on the plans. We have a certain budget number for that, that's been outlined in previous discussions in engineering committee and with the board. We are going to follow the outline per the CEQA document and do those items as per the CEQA document. That has been outlined thoroughly within those documents and discussed multiple times with the engineering committee. This is a custom per lot item, whereas each lot will have a certain amount of drainage difference that we'll have. And one comment was in the engineering committee on May was concern of looking at overall. Yes, we will look at it as overall. But this emulates the model we used on the lower Cascade on the tree restoration and plant restoration, whereas the district put together the tree replacement items on a map. That map was discussed with the landowner and collaboratively with the landowner. The landowner signed the map. We signed the map. We planted the map to a contractor to install the trees accordingly. Thus, that same model worked very well in Lower Cascade. We're using that same one as a drainage model for this project.
Well,
what was the budget number that you had? What would the amount of money be?
Amount of money for the drainage and engineering on this is estimated about $98,000. We capped at $4,000 of engineering cost per lot and $10,000 of construction cost. Those costs come out of what a program called Extended CEQA. In essence, the project is complete and it comes out of our Extended CEQA budget.
So how do you determine whether you fill it or leave it?
That's a collaborative relationship between us and
the property owner.
Yes, that's the property owner's decision.
They all either have to go along with it or not, right?
No. We can, that's what the engineer will do. It's very customized.
Well, if they don't respond, then the ditch gets left as is, correct?
Yes. They'll have given a 60-day response time.
Okay. Every person involved here has come into meetings. They feel that they have a voice. They are content with the procedures so far.
Okay.
Yep. I do want to say we need to look at our canal abandonment policy in view of this. What this project is in no way is addressed in the canal abandonment policy, so that needs to be reviewed, please.
I believe that's in the works.
Yes, sir.
Right. And in fact, we did have a proposed canal abandonment policy, and you requested it be pulled from the agenda.
There was a purpose to that. I can't remember. Your memory must be better than mine. But I certainly did. Out of a need to find some way to have input, probably.
Okay. Is there any public comment on this matter?
Sure.
Or any further board comment?
Mr. King? Approximately what's the total tab cost to the district to encase how many feet of canal?
The Newtown Canal project consisted of 1,900 feet of canal and cost the district $2 million.
So there's a math problem in there if we extrapolated it out to 400 miles of canals?
We have approximately between about 450 miles of canal, sir.
Literally, right? So this would be a way to conserve water. I read these things from people all the time, and you know, why aren't you encasing canals? It's funny because 10, 15 years ago we got beat up for doing it at all. Because it ruined the trails, the pendulum does swing, and that's why things move slowly. When somebody says, why doesn't this thing happen overnight? Well, you do it, and then everything changes. But interesting math problem, 1,900 feet.
$2 million.
Up against, for $2 million, and then 400 miles of canals. Weigh that versus the cost of your reservoir. There's a math problem in there.
If I could lay out the numbers, it's $1.4 million worth of construction, $500,000 of CEQA and other items, and then about approximately $100,000 of extended CEQA items. What I mean is CEQA after the CEQA is...
And to be fair, this was kind of not a cookie cutter. There is a cost to all this, both ways.
Yeah.
Do it in certain circuits. It causes a lot of angst. And, yeah.
This has been a very special project.
It has been, and it is an interesting dilemma as it reflects back to the options that we do pursue with regards to alternatives to a reservoir.
And what was the legal component on this?
As far as what?
Which made it, it inflated the price, to be transparent. And, yeah, it was a legal component.
I guess we were sued.
We don't have that number with us right now. We can get that number.
That's why I said estimate on your initial blush. Just, yeah, some concept for the discussion. That was my comment or highlight. Thank you for the numbers.
Okay,
I don't have a calculator to do.
So my question, Gary, is by adopting this resolution completely discharge our CEQA obligations to these folks?
It will not. It does not, because the CEQA obligations go from start to complete. Until the old canal is completed and done and all that buttoned up, then we've completed our CEQA obligation. Paperwork is not the CEQA obligation. CEQA obligation is part of the CEQA obligation. CEQA obligation is to finish the job. In essence, this is not physical work in the field. Physical work in the field is grading the things as per the CEQA document.
But in order to continue on the path of fulfilling our CEQA obligations, this action is necessary.
That is correct, sir.
Yes, but it's separate. So just really quickly, per our process, the resolution of an intent to abandon is what we is the first step in an abandonment of facilities process. So the CEQA is for the realignment, for putting the pipe in the road. After this is done, then we'll meet with the property owners pursuant to this resolution. Then, and once that work is complete, we will adopt a resolution of abandonment, and then we will discharge the properties and the facility from the district.
Very good. Canal abandonment was addressed in the CEQA document.
Say, I did call for public comment. I didn't see any. Is there a public comment? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve resolution number 2017-12 for the intention to abandon a portion of the Newtown Canal as reviewed in the Engineering Committee meeting on May 16, 2017.
Second. Roll call, please.
Division 1.
Aye.
Division 2.
Aye.
Division 3.
Aye.
Division 4.
Aye.
Division 5.
Aye.
Thank you very much.
Moving on to item number 5. Cast a vote for the LAFCO special district member. I can speak to this a little bit. There are two candidates that have been nominated for the LAFCO special district alternate member. So there are two special district members on LAFCO currently. I sit in one of those seats. Kurt Grundle sits in the other. He's the fire chief of the Penn Valley Fire District. Ed Beckenbach is currently the special district's alternate, and he's with the North San Juan Fire District. He has been renominated to sit in the alternate position, and there's another application from a woman, Patricia Nelson, who I really don't know anything about, other than that she has a fairly impressive resume. Are there any feelings on this? We need to basically cast a ballot at this time for either Ed Beckenbach or Patricia Nelson. I can, from my experience, I have no problems with Ed remaining on the commission. He's been a very adequate alternate member. He's sat in for me on one or two occasions. And, you know, I certainly would recommend him, but it's up to the board. So I have an indication from John that he favors Ed. How do you others feel?
I'd like to know more about them. I am impressed with both of their resumes. I, having been an observer at LAFCO for years ago, it is, I'm trying to find a nicer word than incestuous.
Excuse me.
I'm not turned on.
No, you got silenced.
I think new blood on LAFCO is a good thing periodically. And so I would takes chance on Patricia Nelson. Does anybody know her?
No. Is that your vote?
So I assume that's your vote, Will?
That's my vote, yes. Hmm?
Consistency, I can highlight that.
Okay, Scott? Okay, so the board has indicated a preference for Ed Beckenbach on a 4-1 vote. And I will, is there public comment on this? Yes, please do.
Yeah, but the vote's already been taken. This is moot, but I did want to express, you know, I did look at the background materials. My name is Sid Brown, by the way. And I don't know either of the candidates, and I was curious, the woman, Patricia Nelson, I think was an environmental consultant, has her own company, and is one of her experiences had to do with the Idaho-Maryland mine. And so I was personally concerned about someone who was of that ilk representing the LAFCO interest. So that raised a concern for me, but your vote is taken, so I will shut up. Thank you very much.
Yeah, she's applying for the special district alternate seat, but so far as I can tell, she doesn't really represent a special district. So I'm not even sure she should. Huh?
She's on the Board of Consolidated.
Okay. She does represent a special district.
Consolidated Fire District.
That's fine.
I was confused by the same thing, Sid, is why.
Okay.
I agree.
But thank you for that, Sid. Based on what Sid said, does anybody want to change their vote?
No.
No? Okay. Then we'll move forward and cast our ballot for Ed. Okay. General Manager's report.
Can I intercede prematurely on the director's reports? I weakly said I don't have a calculator, and I don't, but I also, on the prior issue with the numbers, you know, the Centennial Dam's a huge decision. I'm talking tonight to the Pinesmen, and first thing I'm going to do is inventory people on it, but
General Manager's report and board member comments.
Oh, I should have waited for the yes. Sorry. Yeah.
Remember Ron Nelson's words, don't do math in public.
Well, Ron's not here. So basically we had $2 million for 1,900 feet. And again, recognizing this is just an example, not the best example, it would be averageable down and whatnot. But at that rate, when you talk about a $1 billion dam, which we're not really, it's, you know, somewhere up there in a god-awful high number, I agree. But the number, if you say 1,900 feet is half a mile, that's 800 miles times 2 million would be 1.6 billion. So it is a hard decision, and all these things do come into it. And it's not easy just to encase and do the things that are our main thrust of conservation. You know, we asked the citizens to do it, and they've done wonderfully, 26%. They were able to achieve, and that's great. Tanks are revenues, literally, but it ain't easy for us to do some of this other stuff, because then you get the trail people pissed off at you, and you get all these different factions and people. So we do hear you, and I am listening every time you guys come and talk, but yeah, it's not the absolute that the gentleman got up with his long letter, or not long letter, but his letter, Otis's quotes. Yeah, not necessarily. We do the monitoring, and we are submitting those. So your premise that we're filed, couldn't talk during the public comment part. But so 1.6 billion just as a guesstimate of what it would cost to encase all canals, which would enhance conservation. Balance right. That versus 500 million for a dam and a reservoir. It's all of the above. It's all of it.
Encasing all the canals would save about 8 to 9% of the water.
Oh, 15,000 acre feet.
15,000 acre feet at a huge cost. So, I mean, again, we're not suggesting it, but these things are. We do understand them, and we do juggle all these things at the same time as we listen. And I know it sounds like we're not always listening, but okay. We really are as a board.
Thank you. Anything else? Well, since we have switched the agenda.
I mentioned I'm talking tonight. And that's
okay, good. Well, let's continue across, and then we'll go back to Rem.
Sorry.
A couple of things. At the last meeting, we had a member of the public question the board's decision on buying a portable or a generator, emergency generator, and ask why we weren't pursuing solar. So I requested Mr. Greg Jones in the engineering department to do a cursory analysis on what that means. The generator set, which would have 24/7, 365 days a year reliability at a cost of $453,000. The solar option with 24 hours of reliability for the same quantity would cost $1.2 million, so it's about 300% increase in price for solar with 1/300th of the reliability, so it just doesn't work. So if you look at the, if you scale it on 1 to 10, I give solar a 1 and I give the fixed generator a 10. Just the space to take care of the solar panels would encompass the entire parking lot and would have to be a raised structure. Doesn't work at night, doesn't work when there's snow on the panels, and would only be able to store enough electricity for 24 hours. So not a viable option. Now, the other thing, we had a question on why are there red curbs in the parking lot? It's director's comments now, in case you forgot. Well, the red curbs are there for fire, safety, and rescue, accessibility, unfettered accessibility, because people's lives matter. And then there was a question on golf courses. What are we doing about golf courses? The district doesn't own any golf courses. The district doesn't control any golf courses. The district doesn't have any authority or jurisdiction over golf courses. The only time the district's authority and jurisdiction comes into play on golf courses is if there's a water shortage, and they're the first to go. But you water golf courses, the water that's not evapotranspirated ends up going into the groundwater. What? The carbon sequestration rate on grass is huge, just a huge number. The people that use the golf courses get exercise. It's good for them to get exercise. It reduces our health care cost. It's a benefit. The cooling and the humidity effect of green grass is tremendous. It affects our quality of life in this entire region. The greenhouse gas absorption of CO2 is huge from lawns. The habitat is huge. The food chain is huge. There's a huge food chain associated with lawn, and species of a wide variety benefit by having that lawn there. If you want to change golf courses, go talk to the golf course people.
Thank you. Well, over the weekend, I attended the Fruitvale School benefit. It's a one-room schoolhouse that's been turned into an event center celebrating the history of the Fruitvale area, which was a large fruit-growing area of Lincoln. They had an auction. They had music. They had a play. And they raised quite a bit of money to keep that schoolhouse going. And it's a nice area to have a meeting. And like I said, an event center. Also, I did a self-guided agricultural tour Sunday, just by happenstance. And I went up to the, I guess it would be the far reaches of the district, which would be the Upper Garden Bar area. As a crow flies, it's probably about 2 miles to the Bear River, but you can't get to it from the Upper Garden Bar. And I ran into a dairy up there, of all places, a specialty dairy. And they have 50 acres. They have a herd of very unique animals, and they've invested a considerable amount of money there and have a first-class dairy up there. And I think they have maybe 50 or 60 cows that they milk. They sell cheese and ice cream and milk and eggs. And like I said, they've invested a considerable amount of money. It's a first-class operation. And they get water from NID at the Camp Far West ditch.
And if you want speaking of louder or directly into the mic, it would be great. Thank you.
Okay, how's that?
Oh, much better.
I've always had bad mic technique. The tone. This thing doesn't come. There it is. Okay, I'm just about done. You want me to start over? I'm sorry. I do have that problem. So where was I? Oh yeah. So they buy about 20 to. Now can you hear me? About 20 to 30 inches of water of NID water, and they would not be able to have that operation without the water. It's a significant amount of water, and it's used. For the pasture, and it's recycled too, so it's actually used twice. Also, while I was there, a gentleman pulled me off to the side. I was leaving, and he kind of flagged me down, and I didn't know what he was, you know, I'd never seen him before, and he just wanted to meet me, and he didn't know who I was. I didn't know who he was, and as it turns out, he has 50 acres there, and he's going to plant 30 acres of olives there and 5 acres of mandarins, and he's going to also plant a vineyard there. And so, and he gets about 25 inches of NID water there from the same canal. And you know, it's good to see that, you know, that the future of agriculture is alive. I've been on the Ag Commission there for about 25 years. And we've seen quite an uptake in interest in agriculture in the area recently. I'd say in the last 5 years, according to the university, the Ag Extension, they're holding workshops, and they're getting a lot of people filling up their workshops these days of new farmers that are coming in the area. And I've said earlier, it's sort of a renaissance area for agriculture, and you know, they wouldn't be able to do that without the NID water. And as I've said earlier, I moved in that area over 40 years ago specifically because it had NID water. And wherever you see a sign for sale on property there, preeminent there is NID water. So it's important, and that's my, I think that's about it.
Nancy?
I want to go back to the leaky canals because I'm a promoter of leaky canals. I will call them seeping canals because they restore groundwater. I know at some point I heard that the state wanted us to encase all the canals. I know some local people felt that was a solution to conserving water. You have to look at the whole picture. It's not just surface water, it's groundwater too. And that restoration of the groundwater is really important. So all you farmers, all you irrigators, don't give it up, please. We need to use the water, too. I've had a couple of events in the last couple of weeks.
Here, here.
Beg your pardon?
Here.
Thank you. UBINET and KVMR presented a town hall meeting on practical civics. I was a representative of NID. There were Lisa Swarthout was from Grass Valley, Renette Senham from Nevada City, Heidi Hall from the county, and Scott Brown representing LAFCO. The purpose of the meeting was to help people who are probably newcomers to the political scene to figure out how to access information on the NID website, when our meetings are held, what the purpose of committee meetings are, that sort of thing. It was a very interesting experience. I have never been in the same room with all those folks before, although I know them individually, and it was most pleasant and well managed, Pascal. Thank you. She was a great facilitator. Also, I went to Yuba Bear Watershed Council meeting sometime in the past couple of weeks, and I wanted to report on the Hallwood project. The Hallwood project is where it says on the lower Yuba. I think you know where Hallwood is if you drive down 20. Maybe some of you have already kayaked or raft or canoed. I even canoed that part at one point, which I'll never do again. I'm not that good. So the purpose of this project is to restore the floodplain at that area, just below Daguerre Dam. It was started in 2016 with a goal to create riparian habitat on 160 acres of seasonally inundated floodplain. They want to create 3 miles of perennial side channels, 4 miles of seasonal side channels. The winter of 2016-17 wiped out a good portion of what they did. So what they're doing is creating side channels that offer opportunity for spawning for Chinook and Steelhead. A company called Seabeck, Eco Engineering is in charge of it. $2 million in funding comes from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. They also, this company did the Yolo Bypass, if you're familiar with that. They did extensive pre-project monitoring because they wanted to be sure that they had a proven approach to restoring habitat. One finding they had, and this is a special for John, I'm always looking for those, that if there were deep pools...
I'm in favor of this project.
It's really good for steelhead.
If they can increase... Not to interject, please excuse
that's,
me.
That's fine. I introduced you.
You asked for it.
I did.
Yeah, they can increase salmon populations by doing this. They could increase salmon populations dramatically if at the same time they took care of the striped bass.
Well, they found out that only in the deeper pools of these side channels were the predators. The largemouth bass and the
disagree.
Sunfish.
There isn't a place in the world that striped bass won't eat something. And if you ask me what they eat everything that's in the river.
They didn't only mention things, striped bass, John. I got to tell the truth here.
They're pigs with fins.
Okay.
So if you've never been...
Enough of the editorial comment.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
If you've ever been down that waterway, there are those high walls of cobbles, and they're taking those... and redistributing them so that they make channels for spawning habitat. There are partners in this. Tykert is one of the partners. Circle is doing planting as they have an area where they can plant riparian plants. If you want to know more about it, just Google Seabeck, C-B-E-C, a Hallwood project. But it was fascinating. And they have no farm fish. No, they're actually trying to create a natural situation for
before they dredged that entire area back in the day.
Yeah.
It was prime salmon habitat. So it needs to be restored.
Yeah.
It's a positive step forward.
Yeah.
And coupled with other options, it'll be very productive.
I have nothing to add, so we'll move on to General Manager's report.
Good morning, Board. It's my pleasure to update the Board this morning. The district currently is sitting at 244,844 acre feet in storage, roughly 92% of capacity with 116% of average. Our Bowman Lake precip is currently sitting at 134 inches, roughly 204% of average for this time of year, so we're concerned about the heat, drawing what snowpack is above 6,000 feet, which is significant. The Jackson Meadows facilities are not currently open, and we don't anticipate having those recreation facilities open until sometime in June. I had the pleasure of attending and presenting at the Aqua Conference this year. A couple items that were interesting is definitely the focus for the state on the GSAs, on groundwater sustainable agencies and their creation of the GSPs and how those things are going to be funding. I'm pleased to report to the Board that all of our Western Placer GSA members have voted to approve signing of the MOU, and so that group is set and we're now moving forward, and DWR is very aware of of our proactive position and are pleased, and there's going to be more grant funding available for us.
Sir, what's a GSP?
Sorry, the Groundwater Sustainability Plan. So after the GSAs, the Groundwater Sustainable Agencies are formed. So there are a number of them, 1, 2, 3, 4, within this North American River Subbasin, which we're a part of. There will have to be a plan, a groundwater sustainable plan, generated for the whole basin that'll involve all four GS groundwater sustainable agencies. Mm-hmm. So that's something that'll start happening here shortly. The Region 3 Board did meet. We focused predominantly on issues regarding the Headwaters policy. As you know, I am a member of the Headwaters Policy Working Group for Aqua, and we continue to push Sierra issues in terms of how do we manage these, how do we manage the forests, how do we manage these watersheds so that they're a productive and sustainable habitat as well as water producing, based predominantly on the Nature Conservancy information that has been generated, in the hopes that we can cast out that information beyond Region 3 and support others in the Sierras. Also, I had the pleasure of presenting or being a part of the Storage Water Town Hall, and that was really aligned with the Governor's California Water Action Plan, which calls for surface water storage. So they had the Sites Dam, or the Sites Reservoir Project was present, the expansion of Los Vaqueros Dam, that project was present, Temperance Plant Project, that's another dam, and then the San Luis Reservoir Reoperation and Subtropics Reservoir. So this is all, as we're talking about the $2.8 billion that was approved as part of Prop 1 for surface water storage in the state of California. That went, I thought, very well. Other issues, as you know, the South Yuba Canal outage continues. Folks have been great in terms of allowing us or helping us with some flexibility in terms of water demand. Excavation, we believe, for the project in terms of reducing the hill so they could relocate the canal. That work was done yesterday. Now they're in the process of laying the timber for the box flume and preparing to shotcrete the inlet and the outlet to the facility. Their return to service date is still May 31st, so we're rapidly approaching that date. So hopefully they meet it. If they don't, we'll cross that line when we get there.
Do you know when these photos were taken, Ram?
Chip?
Last week.
Okay. All right. So they've gotten down to a bench.
Yes.
All right.
So as
a customer, mm-hmm. I received a letter from NID.
I did too.
Regarding this.
Me too.
So it was received.
Yeah. Thank you. So as part of that, though, the Siphon Lane pump station has been in service for a number of weeks, and the one thing that we're not experiencing, as opposed to what we have experienced in the past using temporary pumps, is that we're not getting noise complaints from the other side of the canyon. And the pump station is running as designed and doing a great job. So we're very pleased about that, given that we've had this type of outage the last 3 years running. I'm also pleased to let the board know that our audio archiving website went live on Monday and seems to be operational. If anybody finds something, a hiccup in it, please let us know. I presented to the Zone 3 PCWA group, which is convened by Director Alpine in Colfax. I had a very nice conversation with their advisory board and presented some portions of the Centennial Project. That went very well, I thought. Also, the audit team is currently on site conducting our 2016 audit, and they're still smiling, so I think it's going very well.
They're still sitting.
As it relates to the alternative analysis for the CEQA document, the paraphrase, I appreciate the paraphrasing, but currently the environmental document looks at a number of alternatives, roughly it's 7 total with conservation on top, 14. So it's 14 total alternatives. So this isn't a no project alternative and the project alternative EIR, which is something that certain organizations do. That's not our intent. The last list, so I had the pleasure of touring the Lodestar Conestoga Road Brewer project as it relates to Director Miller's zone with some of the constituency, and we're currently working on how we're going to deal with significant road damage. Those roads are private, and they are truly
no good deed goes unpunished, Scott Miller.
Private roads will come back again and again until we deal with it.
And they're
all wanted it, now they're yelling at
and,
us.
And the asphalt is truly but anywhere from a half inch thick to an inch thick. So rolling 20-ton loads across it has taken its toll. So currently engineering's working on coming up with a solution for that part of the community. Penn Valley project continues to move forward. We're excited about that. The Shale Ridge pipe, this is the pipeline that essentially will connect the plant with the pipes down in North Auburn. That project is moving with some difficulty. We have a lot of rock down there, so the guys are hammering through that. You have the generator to solar information. Also the NOP, the Notice of Preparation for the Greenhorn Sediment Removal Project, is out. And then I'm very pleased and a little, you know, we got a lot of things, a lot of irons in the fire, but NID has, we've made it all the way to the final budget, so that's on its way to the governor, that set aside little over $6 million for our mercury project, a sediment removal project in Combi. And so Greg and staff have been meeting with DWR to start preparing for those contracts, and this will be a significant opportunity for the district, one, to demonstrate its leadership in terms of mercury removal in this environment, but also to take it to a full-scale engineered process so that we can, again, move that technology out to our sister agencies and we can deal with sediment all the way down to San Diego.
It being the Pegasus machine.
So the Pegasus machine is part of it, correct. But it's also, Director Miller, it's also process. How do we get to this material safely? How do we get it out safely? How do we control it? What does it cost? And in a number of different configurations, dry with process, in the semi-wet, and in the wet. So this is a big deal. I mean, clearly the state is willing to put $6 million, they're willing to pony up to help us try to perfect this process so that we can help our sister agencies like those on the coast out at Clear Lake and Lake Berryessa, but all the way down to San Diego, which have mercury problems in some of their outlying reservoirs. That concludes my update.
I have a comment, if I could.
Yes, ma'am.
You mentioned Region 3 and the headwaters policy.
Yes, ma'am.
The Nature Conservancy information.
Yes.
That's really fascinating, reporters. A way we could put a link to that on our website in some section maybe that NACE is working on.
We can.
With
we
the
can,
forestry.
We can get that up.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. And I highlighted the letter that was sent out only because I knew what it was because I'm here, and I thought it should be highlighted that we were asking for conservation in a year that seems like conservation's not a need because of this huge outage. I mean, it was in there, but I was just highlighting that we did try to inform everybody and ask for their cooperation as well because it's a huge outage.
Thank you, sir.
Yep.
And Gary, on the greenhorn sedimentation removal, on that note, I don't know why I got out of sequence, but I talked to Rim earlier about that. I have some video that's available over on this screen of the sediment load up through that area. If you need to use any of that, it's available.
I think members of the public might be interested in seeing us after the meeting and looking at some of these photos of the South Yuba Canal fix. It's basically the elevated flume is being replaced by a huge hillside bench cut. So there will no longer be an elevated flume there.
I'd also like to point out that we do have it on our webpage, and I have updated the photos there as well.
Okay.
There is a link on our
website. Yeah, this is a major excavation. It's no wonder this taking a little longer. But this is a permanent fix that would only be superseded by a tunnel.
On PG&E's dime.
You tunnel nuts back there are all smiling.
And PG&E is paying for this in its entirety. We have not taken this facility over yet.
Right. How are we actually doing in terms of supply? We're able to, with whatever conservation is being effectuated, how are we doing?
We're doing very well. So the pump stations are all operating. We're not at capacity at this point. We anticipate being able to make it to the 31st comfortably.
That's great.
Past the 31st, then things could get uncomfortable.
Well, being the last service on the tar, I see the water in my box, and I love it.
Are we still receiving substantial natural?
God's flat.
Chip Close, Water Operations Manager. Natural is dwindling rapidly.
Okay.
The extreme temperatures we had over the last few days is drying things up, but there's still enough that our emergency backup supplies are sustaining for now. So that's the good news, and then thank you to the board for supporting those projects. They have come in very timely.
And thank you to engineering and operation for coming up through the idea of the pump station.
Very good. At this time, I'll entertain a public comment on any items be considered in closed session. There was some comment on that earlier. If you wish to make that comment again, Peter, feel free.
I think we'll be covered. He's not a
Ricky.
Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning. Ricky Heck, Grass Valley. I come before you today to talk about, again, these real estate purchases. So, you know, I am really deeply troubled by NID's continued real property acquisitions for this Centennial Dam project. NID is using taxpayer money before it has a permitted project, before any financial analysis, before the completion of the science, the cultural and environmental studies, and before any permits are issued. Today, there is yet another closed session discussion regarding the purchase of parcels in the project area. Two of these are privately owned. I don't know if y'all know, but I took took a minute to look it up. One is a two-bedroom, two-bathroom, single-family home on 2.5 acres located at 22684 Dog Bar Road. According to public records, the assessed value is approximately $400,000. The other property is a three-bedroom, two-bathroom, single-family home, 2,369 square feet on 1.5 acres, located at 14975 Deerwood Place. The assessed value of this home is $446,000 and some change. Combined, these two purchases, if completed, could be over $850,000. When you add that to the $4,149,881 in purchases completed from 2014 to date, that could bring the total to approximately $5 million spent for land acquisitions so far. You know, I'm not sure NID has a full grasp of the impact of their actions have on property owners in this proposed project area. Owners are facing many unknowns, and they are suffering. We have heard from them. There was a gentleman here just last month who was very emotional about the prospect of losing his home. Others are delaying needed improvements. Will they put on the needed roof before winter? Will they make the addition they've been wanting to do? Will they complete their maintenance projects? Do they begin to look for another home, or do they live with this uncertainty? These same owners, I believe, are being economically disadvantaged. If they want to sell now and get out, they only have one buyer. They cannot expect to sell for a market price to a willing buyer when they have to disclose their property may be inundated by a new dam. This has the effect of lowering their property values and the values of all the properties within the scope of this project. This ensures the only one buyer, NID, can gobble up their property for a reduced price. NID, by its actions, by these actions, are hurting families, hurting retirees, and those who may also be living on the margins. NID is driving the value of real estate downward in a market that is now inflated. These homeowners are being denied the opportunity and the advantage to take advantage of the current profitable real estate market and may well suffer economic damages. Today, I am calling on NID to suspend all further property purchases and negotiations for properties within the Centennial Bear River project area until the full environmental impact study under NEPA is complete, certified, and permits are issued. It is the right thing to do. Thank you.
Is this mic on this time? Can everyone hear me?
Speak up.
Okay. I will speak up. Hi, everyone. My name's Tracy Shannon. I'm the coordinator with the Foothills Water Network. For folks who don't know who the network is, we represent a growing coalition of local, state, and national groups that are opposed to this dam. And that includes Circle, who's here today, American Rivers, who did the Most Endangered Rivers report, and many others. I'm here today because the network urges this board to suspend buying homes and land that would be flooded by the proposed Centennial Dam until the environmental and financial analysis have been completed and disclosed to the public. Last month, UBINET filed a public records request to NID and obtained records, thank you, Pascal, obtained records and information showing that NID has spent over $4 million of ratepayer and taxpayer money to buy out homes and properties that would be destroyed by the dam. Today, the board will move into closed session to consider two more homes that could total $800,000 or just another million, making the price tag $5 million. And while the environmental documents and full description of the project is not available yet to the public should know, and we do know generally, that 25 homes would be flooded and it would impact another 120 parcels of land. And as I should add, as we understand it, not everyone's willing to sell. And so eventually you'll have to use your power of eminent domain to attempt to remove them from their homes. At the heart of this issue and what the network, thank you, Ricky, for your comments. The network at the heart of this issue is that the environmental documents and the public process hasn't yet even begun. We've just started. On one hand, that we've heard that the board wants a thorough and detailed analysis of the cost and alternatives before you make your decision on whether to approve this dam. And the network supports a full detailed analysis because that's when we know that the public actually has a chance to get involved and understand what is at stake. We've also heard last month that that's the time when the public will really understand what the costs are, what the cost of the dam will be. We can't have a cost estimate now, not even on the back of the envelope cost estimate. And that's when we'll also hear about how the dam will be paid and who will pay for the dam. And so what we know that on one hand, the analysis isn't done, and on the other hand, you're buying up properties and gobbling up public resources at the same time using ratepayer and taxpayer money to do that. So we ask that you suspend your negotiations and purchasing of these lands until the public, it's been disclosed to the public, the environmental impacts of the dam. Thank you.
Cedar Ridge, Grass Valley. I have a question. I know you don't usually answer questions, but for item four on the closed session, I would really appreciate some background on that or an expansion. Really curious as to what that's all about. Thank you.
Dustin Cooper, District Council. Madam, are you referring to the South Sutter Water District closed session item?
Yes, that item.
Would the board like me to briefly describe that?
Sure.
I think it's been described before, so you can simply repeat what's been said before.
Okay. South Sutter Water District, well, let me back up. NID in 2014 filed for assignment of a existing state filed water right. As part of that process, there's opportunity for interested parties to protest. South Sutter Water District is one of those parties that has protested. So the district is involved as required through that process in discussing with each of those protestants the terms under which the protest could be resolved. So this particular agenda item is to discuss discussions with South Sutter Water District regarding their protest.
Thank you, Dustin. Okay. Seeing no other public comment on items to be considered in closed session, we'll adjourn.
Close, close. Open, open.
Nick Wilcox.
I'd like to report out of closed session that direction was given to management on real property acquisitions and that no action was taken on the general manager evaluations. With that, we'll close. Open. Thank you. Thank you.